This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show, hour number two here on the team, 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. The Masson deal is no more for the Nationals. We'll talk to Chelsea James about it at 5:30, but right now, top story of the day, you know what it is. Debo Samuel's coming to D.C. Let's talk about with someone who knows Debo quite well.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not my beat.
Joining us to discuss more on the Debo Samuel trade, someone who's had Debo Samuel on his beat for the entirety of Debo's NFL career, it's our pal Nick Wagner from ESPN.com. Nick, we knew when Adam Peters made the transition from San Francisco assistant general manager to Washington general manager that there would probably eventually be some guys that would follow him. When did you think it was realistic that Debo Samuel would be one of those guys? Did you always kind of think this may go down, knowing that Debo's kind of been one foot in, one foot out the last couple of years? Or was it at some point during the season when Washington was really good, did you go, oh, no, maybe Debo will wind up following Adam to Washington next year?
Yeah, I think there's been a couple of steps to this. But the first thing is there was always going to come a breaking point between the 49ers and Debo, and more specifically between the 49ers and one of their top two receivers. Like I just never got the idea from talking to people at the 49ers that they had an appetite to pay both Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk near the top of the wide receiver market. It's tough to pull that off. You see the Eagles doing it, but there's not a lot of teams that are paying two receivers that amount of money. So then you kind of look at how the contracts were laid out, what happened with Brandon Ayuk last year. Obviously, there was a lot of scuttlebutt about him being traded. My understanding was the Niners always, throughout that whole process, preferred to keep Ayuk. It was just a matter of if they could find the number to make that happen. And then so last offseason, there were a lot of things that kind of pointed towards Debo Samuel was going to be the one on his way out. Part of that was a drop-off in production, but also just the fact that they really had trouble, you know, getting away from man coverage and dealing with the man coverage that the Chiefs threw at them in the Super Bowl. That's not exactly Debo Samuel's game. They drafted Ricky Pearsall in the first round last year. And so all those signs were kind of pointing towards a divorce coming this offseason. As far as when I thought Washington would be a player, I think when you saw the Commanders kind of take off this year, that made more sense because I didn't get the impression that, you know, I just don't think there was a team that was going to be, you know, in the bottom of the draft or bottom of the standings that was going to be looking for a Debo Samuel type of player. But once it became clear the Niners were going to move on from him, I think Washington was certainly at the top of my head, and especially because Terry McLaurin is the type of receiver who complements him really well because McLaurin can do some of those things. He runs so many routes and is good at getting down the field and then types of things that will open up underneath things for Debo Samuel. So to me, it just made a lot of sense from a football perspective. And then you factor in the Adam Peters element to this, and it really made all kinds of sense.
So the production side of it is where Washington fans are like, I don't know. The production obviously dropped off. Nothing like 2021. That season is like an all-time wide receiver season. That's not who he's been his entire career. It is what got him paid. Congrats to Debo. Even if you get 2023 Debo, I think Washington fans would be thrilled. So what happened in 2024?
Yeah, I think what you've seen is an accumulation of things. First of all, with Debo Samuel, the thing that makes him great is also the thing that is difficult for him to deal with because his style of play just doesn't lend itself to maximum durability. And That doesn't necessarily mean he's missing a bunch of games, because if you look at games missed over the last 3 years, there's not a lot of them. I mean, he missed some, but it's not bad. It's not like he's, you know, Cooper Kupp has missed more games than Deebo Samuel over the last 3 years by a fairly wide margin. But it's the nicks and the bruises, the things that slow him down. Even just this past year, he had multiple things that happened, including an illness in which he had pneumonia symptoms and missed a big chunk of a game that it looked like he was going to play. He was active, and then he tried to give it a go, and within a few plays, it just wasn't going to work out. So I think that is part of it, certainly the injury standpoint with Deebo Samuel, because of his playing style, his kind of fearless take on anybody, the style that makes it difficult for him to stay healthy. So there was some of that. I also think this year, you know, it's easy to kind of go back and change history. But going into training camp, Deebo Samuel was in great shape. He had a really good training camp, and there was a lot going on out here during camp last year with Trent Williams, with Brandon Ayuk. There were so many different things that were happening. And Deebo was like the one reliable star who was on the practice field every day and producing, had a really good camp. And I thought he was in line for a really big season, also because he was kind of in a de facto contract year. Not exactly a contract year, but essentially one. And so it really seemed like everything was lining up for him to have that kind of year. It just didn't happen. As the year went on, I don't think he was in as good a shape as he came in with. Some of that was because of the injuries, and maybe it made it harder for him to stay in shape. But that has been something that people have kept an eye on throughout his career here. And then I also think there's just an element of there's so many mouths to feed here between Ayuk and Kittle and McCaffrey. And I know they were missing some of those guys this year, but Juwan Jennings had a breakthrough year. It just made it more difficult for Deebo to produce. So I do think this is a player who's probably more on the downturn, but I also think, to your point, it wouldn't be outrageous for him to get back to something like that 2023 level, which I'm sure the Commanders would be more than happy to take.
Nick Wagner, ESPN.com, with us here on the Hoffman Show, talking Deebo Samuel. The biggest number that dropped off to me, or like the most concerning number, is the rushing yardage. He went from about over six a carry for three straight years to three a carry last year. What was up with that? I know the 49ers offense as a whole struggled running the football last year. So there's certainly a lot of factors that could go into it. You watched it all. What were the ones that stuck out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, at some point with Deebo Samuel, the element of surprise is gone. So, you know, when the Niners sprung that on everyone in the 2021 season, it was out of necessity. Raheem Mostert was injured. Elijah Mitchell was getting banged up. And so Deebo was kind of just like a last resort, and it worked so well that it became kind of a staple of their offense. And so I think as the years have gone on, and also you ran into in the ensuing 2 years where they had Christian McCaffrey, they had George Kittle, they had Brandon Ayuk, Juwan Jennings, they had all these guys where, yeah, even if Deebo was, you knew Deebo was going to get the ball, it was a lot harder to stop. So last year, I think you saw a combination of things. One, a lot of those guys were missing. So everyone's eyes were on Deebo Samuel. When you put him in the backfield, everyone was expecting it and stopping it pretty easily, actually. And like you said, there were also issues running the ball, and those were blocking issues in some instances as well. The other thing is Deebo Samuel just, quite frankly, did not do as good a job as he has in the past of breaking tackles. And again, I think that is a play style that is the thing that made him great, but it's very hard to sustain that ability for a long period of time because you take so much of a pounding from the many hits that you take. Even if you're breaking tackles, you're still taking punishment. So I think it was a combination of those things. And even if you look at Deebo Samuel as a receiver last year, wasn't breaking as many tackles when he wasn't in the run box and wasn't confined to space that way. So there was a little bit of a drop off in that regard. I still think, Craig, that there is ways that Deebo Samuel can be used in the run game, that he can be effective. I just think that the days of him being able to line up in the backfield, taking a handoff and ripping off 6 yards to carry are probably gone. That doesn't mean you can't use him with jet sweeps, orbit motion, those types of things where you can get the ball in his hands in an easier way than throwing it downfield.
For sure. And those are all staples of the Washington offense with Cliff. And so are some of like the slammer screens and all those kinds of things that Deebo has been amazing at. And the Commanders last year, like De'Ami Brown did a good job of those, but he ain't Deebo Samuel. as far as the off the field slash on the field, off the field stuff, that is the other area where I think fans have questions. We saw the incident on the sideline last year where he's yelling at Jake Moody and then slaps the long snapper. There's been all the contract talk in the off season. And I, for me personally, Nick, I'm guessing like you, as someone who covers the league, like these are things that happen. They are not ideal. There are guys that take care of their contract stuff more quietly than Debo did. That is probably more ideal if we're talking about it from a fan slash organizational perspective. But we also know that character and kind of the guys that the brotherhood and how they came together was a huge part of this Washington season. So what do we make of some of Debo's, I'm going to call it off the field, but I'm just saying that as a way to categorize things, not in an indicting way. What do we make of the off the field stuff?
Yeah, I think it's revisionist history for people to pretend like Debo was some sort of a cancer or a problem in the locker room. I don't think that. I don't feel that. Now, were there things that annoyed people? Sure. And you mentioned the incident with the kicker and the long snapper and things like that. The thing about Debo is Debo's an emotional player, and I think other guys actually feed off of that more than anything. And I think if you talk to a lot of his teammates here, they all loved him because he was that guy who he wasn't afraid to say whatever was on his mind. But more often than not, Craig, he went out and backed it up. And I think if you go back to the Super Bowl, the last Super Bowl season, and they lost to the Chiefs, there's the Philadelphia situation. If you remember that, you know, they played the Eagles in the NFC Championship game. Brock Purdy gets hurt early on. And that whole offseason, anytime Debo Samuel was asked about it, he was like, I think we would have won that game. He made it very clear he thought he was going to have a big game, that the Niners would have won that game if Brock Purdy hadn't gotten hurt, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, Eagles fans didn't like that. And then the following season, they played the Eagles in December. Debo Samuel, that week leading up to that game, spoke his mind. He stood by everything he said, went to the game dressed in all black for what he would later say was the Eagles' funeral, and then put up over 150 yards and 3 touchdowns in the game. So I say all that to say that I think that there is certainly he could rub people the wrong way, but I also think that teammates really appreciate the fact that he is willing to set a tone. And I could tell you, as someone who has covered these guys and knows them pretty well, Trent Williams and Debo Samuel are really close friends. And I wrote a story about this a couple years ago, and I was talking to Trent Williams about what it is, you know, why he and Debo kind of were close and why they were such good friends. And Trent Williams told me that one of the things that he learned from Debo, who, mind you, is quite a bit younger than Trent, was that it's okay to have a little swag. It's okay to say that you're the best, to speak that into existence, which is a crazy thing to hear from Trent Williams because everybody knows he's one of the best tackles in the league. But Debo's kind of openness about his own standing in the league made Trent more confident that he could put himself out there in a similar way. So I say all that again because I think that Debo is largely been a positive influence and a tone setter for a very successful era of 49ers football that, yes, it didn't end in a Lombardi trophy like they would like to, but I think it has been obviously very successful on the aggregate, and I think that Debo Samuel has been a big part of that.
Nick Wagner, ESPN.com, with us for just another couple of minutes here on The Hoffman Show. That's so interesting to hear that about Trent, because I covered Trent here when, and I was still on the beat, and he was obviously the best player on the team. And there was always like, it's not quite humility. Like, it is humility, but there's kind of like a, I know I'm the best, but please don't make me say it kind of thing about him. Right. Like, he just kind of give you that smirk. And I love that for Trent, that he now is just like, nope, I'm the best, because he is. And it's just so inarguable in terms of what he's been for the last decade in terms of left tackle play in the NFL. All right. Last things for you, Nick. I want to ask you about two non-Debo guys that are also on Commanders fans' radars, free agents for San Francisco. One is one of the top corners on the market, Charvarius Ward. What do you think who is he as a player? And do you think the Niners will bring him back, or is he someone that's going to get paid and go somewhere else? And, you know, Washington could certainly be in the market for another corner opposite of Marshawn Lattimore.
Yeah, Charvarius Ward's market is going to be fascinating, because if he had hit the market after the 2023 season, he probably was in line for a $20+ million a year deal. And then last year happened, and so much of what happened, and he would tell you it was one of his worst years, but it was one of his worst years off the field. Like, he went through so much, and for people who don't know, his young daughter died kind of suddenly after some heart problems. She was almost 2 years old, and that happened during the bye week, and it just, as you would imagine for any human being, it threw his whole world kind of into flux for the rest of the season. And so he did come back and he tried to play through it, but as you can imagine, he was distracted for much of that time, kind of spoke openly about it at the end of the year. Terrier's Ward is still a really good player, I believe. I think he's got a lot of good football still left in him, even though I think he's approaching 30 at this point. I just don't know how teams are going to value him. I will say, the chances of him coming back to the 49ers, you know, speaking with him at the end of the year, I didn't get the impression that was going to be likely, and mainly because, he has a lot of trauma in California. Like, coming back here makes him think about his, you know, his young daughter, and I think a fresh start kind of situation is something that maybe he is looking for. But again, I don't know what the market would command for him. He's a bigger corner, physical corner, good press corner, can play zone or man. Very confident guy, had a really tremendous year in 2023, and a good locker room guy. I know his teammates loved him. So if he is in that, you know, kind of $13-14 million a year range, that would certainly be more than the Niners could afford, even if coming back here was realistic. But I don't know. I just don't know, frankly, what his market is going to be, because, you know, how much do teams say, like, yeah, we understand that you went through a lot last year, we're still going to pay you, or not? I don't have that answer.
Yeah. And, you know, who knows? Like, your life has changed forever when something like that happens. So I hope wherever he goes that he's happy, man. That is so brutal. Guy I want to ask you about, I think Commander's priority at safety is probably to re-sign Jeremy Chinn, but who knows what happens when he hits the market. And obviously, it's easy to connect the dots to Talanoa Hufanga, who Adam Peters played a huge role in drafting out in San Francisco. A guy that probably 2 years ago, Nick, you're like, this guy's, I'm going to be covering him for a decade. Like, he's going to be a Niner for life, the level he was playing at. A couple of injury plagued seasons later, he's now going to hit the free agent market. What kind of player still is he, and what do you think he ultimately or where do you think he ultimately lands?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of put him in, and Dre Greenlaw, who's the linebacker that the Niners have, was a free agent also. I kind of put those guys in the same bucket where it's really hard to get a read on what their market is going to be, because both guys are really good players when they're healthy. Greenlaw in particular, I think, is an outstanding player who probably doesn't get enough credit when he's healthy, but they haven't been healthy enough. And so how do teams value them? Probably, I would say, for me, you know, 1 year kind of prove it deals. Can you stay healthy for a year? And then next year, maybe you cash in. But as you know, Craig, it just takes one team to say, well, we'll give you a 3 year deal or whatever. And, you know, we'll build in some incentives and we'll make it a little bit more lucrative than a 1 year deal with. And maybe they would take that because, you know, just to give you an example, Greenlaw, when he signed his most recent deal with the 49ers, I remember asking him, like, did he sign it during the season? I said, well, you know, why now, Dre? Like, why didn't you want to test the market? Like, you probably could have gone out and gotten life-changing money, which I guess it's all life-changing money, but you know what I mean?
Right.
There's levels to this. And he said, well, he said, I've had some injuries and stuff. I want to get some security for my family. So he signed a 2 year deal that was certainly below the market of what a guy like him would have commanded if he had become free. So I say that because I think both of these guys are in a similar situation where they probably would like some more security, and maybe they could be had below market but above a 1 year prove it deal, if that makes sense, kind of in a happy medium between those types of things. So as for Hufanga, you know, he didn't have quite as many, you know, just debilitating injuries as Greenlaw. You know, he's not coming off an Achilles. He was coming off of an ACL from the previous year. And then he dealt with a wrist thing, which I didn't think was a huge deal, but he played pretty well toward the end of the year. I think with Hufanga, what you get is a guy who is very instinctive and he can make big splash plays. But he's also someone who's a little bit prone to giving up those big plays when he's wrong. And so that's kind of the fire that you play with a guy like him, but certainly a great leader, a guy who is, you know, well respected in the locker room. And I think certainly would be there if he was to land there. So I don't know what kind of price you're getting with him, but again, that might be someone who you could get at a relative bargain and see where it goes.
Maybe the free agent market's always been this crazy and I haven't had to pay as much attention to it because Washington stunk most of the time that I've covered them, but it does feel this year like it's all over the place for so many players. Really unique market. It's going to be fun to follow over the next couple of weeks. But speaking of which, just like 30 seconds here, this isn't the main point of our call, but I am curious, like, the Niners are supposed to be good. Like, they still want to compete. Like, where do the Niners see themselves as, you know, potential competition for Washington and Philadelphia and Detroit and the teams at the top of the NFC going into 2025?
I think they're in a little bit of a crossroads right now because they want to be competitive. They want to be competitive every year, and they certainly would like to be Super Bowl competitors this year, if for no other reason than the Super Bowl will be played in their home stadium. But I also think they're in a little bit of a spot, and they won't use the word rebuild, but I think maybe a reset. And the Deebo Samuel is a good example of telling you that they're open to this because they're eating $31+ million in dead money. And I think they need to get younger. They know they need to get younger, and they also need to find a way to start kind of clearing their books. So the fact that they're eating that much dead money, I think they're over $60 million in dead money this year, tells you that they're in a little bit of a reset from where they're at contract-wise and in terms of who their core is going to be moving forward, because they're going to sign Brock Purdy to an extension most likely at some point here this offseason. George Kittle will probably get an extension, but I think they're going to be a little bit more selective about who they're building around and who they are right now. So, yes, they want to be competitive. Are they on a Washington or a Philadelphia level? That remains to be seen because they've got a lot of work to do, particularly when it comes to rebuilding both of their lines. Right?
Just use the word recalibrate, Nick. It'll send you right to the NFC Championship game. That's what we did here. No rebuild.
It's funny you say that because John Lynch used that word did multiple really? Times.
So. I'm sure he did. I'm sure he did. Nick, this is great as always. Really appreciate you, man. It's been great reading your coverage of this as it's been building up and then to have you on the show here to finish it off. Nick Wagner, everybody, ESPN.com. You can check out the story that he and John Keim wrote on the Deebo trade and much, much more. Nick, thanks, dude.
You got it, Craig. Take care. See ya.
ESPN.com's Nick Wagner. When we get back, the Washington Post's Chelsea Janes on the Masson deal finally coming to an end for the Nats.